There's a time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
That was UC Berkeley in 1964. Mario Savio speaking on the steps of Sproul Plaza during the height of the free speech movement. This was UC Berkeley yesterday. The Occupy Cal movement has officially begun, and the university administration has wasted no time in trying to end it. Police moved in twice on Wednesday, attacking and arresting students and confiscating tents and other supplies. 39 people were arrested, including one UC Berkeley faculty member. The inaugural day of Occupy Cal started positively enough, with teach-ins throughout the morning and a march on Bank of America at 1. Early in the afternoon, students officially voted to occupy the campus in solidarity with occupations around the world and to protest fee hikes in the UC system. By 3 p.m., occupiers gathered in Sproul Plaza were joined by riot police from UCPD, the Alameda County Sheriff's Department, and the Oakland Police Department. Cynthia, a lifelong Bay Area resident and a student at Cal, witnessed the confrontation from the sidelines.
There was people assembled and, you know, they were doing the peaceful thing. And the cops came out of their little cave, which is what I like to call it. And they came out in full gear. Like, they didn't even know what was going on. They were just ready with batons out, like, the masks on. And it was maybe around 50. And they were just running, just, like, ready to attack the students. And they did.
Josh is a graduate student in the English department. He spent the night in the student health center after taking a blow to the head from a police baton.
The cops had formed a line out in front of the north side of Sproul, and so we formed a line in a big body, a huge body of like densely packed students linking arms to prevent them from taking the tents. After a bit of a standoff, a couple of announcements, where the lieutenant actually participated in a mic check. I got a picture of that. We taught him how to do it. We're like, no, say mic check, and everybody... He was like, you have to leave. And then we were like, no, fuck you, and stuff like this. So they just formed a little phalanx and tried to come along right along the bushes and like squeeze their way through, but everybody kind of pushed in to form a wall.
After ordering them to leave the area, police surrounded the protesters and began dragging students across the lawn, beating them with batons, pinning them to the ground, and arresting them.
And they just started wailing on us, and I got a black eye, and my face was swollen up on my right temple, just sort of everywhere, like a lot of people did, my right leg, my right upper forearm.
Marika, also an English student, was trying to help another protester when she was attacked by police.
I was there around 3 o'clock when they put on the police put on their riot gear and started walking towards us, and we linked arms, and obviously we saw the video on YouTube, and they just kind of unleashed the batons at us, and I was actually beaten while trying to help someone off the ground. I was not advancing. I was trying to help someone who had fallen because it's dangerous, obviously.
The people I spoke with today wanted me to make it very clear to you that this was unprovoked aggression on the part of the cops and that the students were peacefully assembled. Keep in mind, this was around 4 o'clock in the afternoon. No pretense of curfew violation could possibly have been used. This was a blatant and violent attempt to stifle the voices of UC Berkeley students. I asked Marika if any students had taken down the badge numbers or names of particularly aggressive officers.
One of the facilitators of a discussion we were having said that she tried and then a couple of them had them covered up so she couldn't see them. And she was like, that's when she said, you know what, I was trying to respect it. And then I saw that some of them had their badge numbers covered, and that's when I just lost all respect.
Eventually, students were able to force the cops away from the camp.
The students or the people participating thought it was an achievement for them because the police had formed a line around the tent and blocked us all off from it. And then they were beating students, and we would chant at them, you know, stop beating students, stop, stop.
Stop beating students! Stop beating students! Stop beating students!
And then eventually what actually happened, they were at that point, it was around 4 o'clock, I think, and we managed to kind of kind of keep kind of crowd in on them and keep going in, so they were kind of all pushed back into a circle, and then the crowd managed to push them back away from the tent area, back behind the building, away from where we were occupying.
Around 6 p.m., Vice Chancellor for Student Affairs Harry LeGrand addressed the crowd.
I think we're all fighting for the same causes.
I think we're all fighting for the same causes.
I think we're all fighting for the same causes.
We appreciate your concerns. About the economy.
Matt Reese, a philosophy major who has been observing and documenting the Occupy movement, describes the second confrontation with police, which occurred around 10 p.m.
Everyone saw that they were massing there. There was this sort of human chain that formed surrounding the tents that were located sort of in the corner there on the...
How many students?
In the chain? Oh, I don't know.
It's probably a few hundred.
It was 5 or 6 deep, I would say,
and
completely,
deep leaks, yeah.
Completely, you know, enclosing where the tents were, and then just at one point, as sort of predictable, police started moving forward, thrusting their batons forward, yelling "Move at people," and I wasn't in the chain myself, but I was running around getting video footage. With my camera, taking pictures, that sort of thing.
One of the Occupy Cal medics, who wishes to remain anonymous, called UCPD's tactics brutal.
They had their gas mask pouches next to them, so we assumed that they might be using tear gas eventually. It was a shock and awe tactic. It was to scare the people off.
Students began to disperse, but only temporarily. Later that night and into the morning, some 2,000 students and supporters from around the Bay Area gathered for a general assembly.
I don't think the cops had a clear understanding. What's the relationship between the bunch of people who voted and are now parleying with the administration proper, rejecting and not knowing whether or not they're supposed to clear us out of 10, or whether or not, since we're actually, even though we rejected, we're still abiding by their rules, sort of de facto, because we're just all standing around for hours, but without tents, although the tents did come back and stuff. But I think the main reason was because, like, Oakland came out and more people came out, and they simply didn't have the numbers. You know, they just didn't have the tactical ability to do anything about it. So there's no way they could have, like, cleared us off the steps.
The group voted to strike on Tuesday, November 15th, and daily general assemblies will focus on planning for this strike. Videos of the recent attacks on UC Berkeley students have gone viral.
Yeah, it seems like all of these videos and things of the cops beating us went, like, super viral, super quickly. I mean, as soon as I got out of the hospital and walked and, like, went to a buddy's house, that video had 4,000 shares on Facebook.
If past history is any guide, the excessive force shown by UCPD will only strengthen this occupation, just like we saw in Oakland and New York. In solidarity, I'm Liz Reed. Thanks for listening.